Hello, my name is Maureen. I will be reading the Iroquois County Times-Republic for the week of October 17th. There are a number of front page articles, and I'll take them from the top. The first one is titled, Watseka Welcomes Alliance Polysacks to Community. A new manufacturer in Watseka is up and running, Alliance Polysacks, hosted a ribbon-cutting ceremony conducted by the Watseka Area Chamber of Commerce October 14th. Local business people and city and county officials were on hand to welcome the company to town. Those present were given tours of the facility, which is at 255 West Fleming, in the old UARCO Standard Register facility. Partners in the firm, Rupak Kobawala and Sanjay Jain, and director Tyler Baer, were on hand along with several others associated with the company. Those in attendance were able to see the work being done. Mr. Kobawala said, "This business is a joint venture between an Indian company, Mr. Jain's, and this facility here. We will be making bags primarily for the cement industry." He said they import fabric and convert it into bags. "We are the first of its kind in America, and we are really happy to be doing this in Watseka." Jane said they are looking for employees. As production increases, he said the plan would be to hire 70 to 75 people. "We will be running 3 shifts, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week." The men said they are very community-minded. Mr. Kobawala continued and said, "We have been blessed in this country, and we look forward to be able to give back to this country. And we hope that we hire enough people and we can really be a part of the fabric of this city. I know that Watseka needs the jobs, and we are very happy to be able to provide them." Mr. Jain said the business is a highly automated process. "The fabric is imported, and then we print them with the brand of the buyer. The fabric is converted to bags with the machines, which are highly automated. They are globally the best machines available. One thing I would like to mention is that these machines have all safety requirements which should be there. They have various sensors at different phases of the machine. It makes them absolutely accident-free. The process is very simple." And Mr. Jain said they are looking for people with electronic and mechanical skills. Mr. Baer said they will be looking at ways to be part of the community. Kobawala said they donated $500 to the Watseka Area Food Pantry to set off our new venture. Watseka Mayor John Allhands and Alderman Benny Marcier were at the event, along with WACC Chamber Executive Director Amanda Hibbs and some board members. Iroquois Economic Development Executive Director Angel Crawford was also in attendance. Allhands said the city is pleased to welcome the company to Watseka. "This is an exciting thing for Watseka. How many years this building has been empty now? We probably met with these folks about a year and a half ago." He said when the company gets to full capacity, it could be up to 75 workers. That's something that Watseka has not seen in a long, long time. He did say, noting that there were 1 paint line and 2 manufacturing lines running October 14th, and when the company is at full capacity, it will be 6 lines and 2 paint lines. Around the country with some of the big box stores, you're probably going to see a lot of stuff that's manufactured in Watseka through Alliance Polysacks, so that's very exciting for the city. The next story is Iroquois County residents stepped up to help with the hurricane relief in North Carolina recently. Local resident Lisa Banga put a request on social media after talking with an equestrian friend in North Carolina and hearing all the devastation that had occurred after Hurricane Helene. The hurricane hit Florida September 26th and then traveled northeast and was very devastating to several communities in North Carolina. Several in the equestrian community got together and were able to coordinate a 40-foot horse trailer, which would leave Gordyville on October 12th. From there, several groups and individuals organized collecting items to send. Watseka Family Festival volunteers collected items at Walmart in Watseka, and people brought donations of baby items, personal items, blankets, pillows, towels, and gas cans, along with food and bottled water. Toys for Tots donated several bags of new toys that were left from last year's Christmas event. A couple of church groups donated several new handmade quilts. The Watsika group had collected 3 trailers full of items that were picked up on October 11th and taken to Gordyville to make the delivery. Teacher Phil Wilkie and several Watsika Community High School students helped to load the trailers in Watsika. Watsika police officers and several other volunteers also contributed time to make sure the items were loaded in a timely manner. It was noted on the Gordyville USA social media that many people collected money to help cover the cost of getting the items to North Carolina. Gordyville USA posted that donations came from many communities in the area. Next article. Mayor Mark Rabe called the October 7th meeting of the Crescent City Board to order. Clerk Kathy Christensen took roll call with the following trustees present: Jim Sorensen, Kim Rabe, Chris Moracle, Steve Carley, and Joe Bellot. Also present were Jeff Hildenbrand, Building Inspector Issuer, Al Johnson, Maintenance Engineer, and Mary Carley, Treasurer, and Joe Martin of Crescent City. Christensen gave the oath of office to Martin to fill a trustee position. Johnson gave an update on things he's doing throughout the community to prepare for winter. He asked about new benches for the park as he wants to get those installed prior to Fireball Festival 2025 next June. He inquired about getting new tires and a bucket attachment for the backhoe. He was advised by the board to check into costs. No one from ERH was present, but a report was sent over. For September, all required samples were collected and analyzed. Monthly operating reports were submitted. Equipment was serviced. The emergency generator was tested. Julie locate requests were responded to. Wells were rotated, and the EPA triannual cross-connection surveys were mailed. Trustee Bellot shared information on work that has been done and did an update on water-related issues. Hildenbrand did not have much of an update. However, Trustee Jim Sorensen, a member of St. Peter's Lutheran Church, read a letter which had been addressed to Pastor Joel Brown and was included in the church's October newsletter. In the letter, Jerry Powell shared how he and his wife had stopped by the church while passing through Crescent City. Hildenbrand had approached the couple and offered them some history on the church and chatted with the couple for quite a while. Powell shared how his wife had passed away unexpectedly, but he wanted to share the story of how Hildenbrand had made their last unplanned stop together special. Members of the board commended Hildenbrand for welcoming the strangers to the community and taking time to share with them. Mary Carley presented her Village and Community Center reports to the board. It was noted there are 3 properties with liens against them due to past water bills, another property where water has been disconnected, and a few residences with past due amounts that will be included on the upcoming bills, which will be sent out the 1st of November. After discussion, the village report was approved. For the community center, there are some repairs which need to be done, but no one has submitted a bid on any of the work yet. The community center report was then approved as presented. In new business, Mayor Rabe noted there are properties in violation of city ordinance, so notices specifying those violations would be going out to property owners soon. There are a couple properties which are in the demolition process, so we gave an update on those. 5 trees will be purchased for the village, one of which will be in memory of Dennis Boyer. Kim Rabe reported the Santa Parade visit is set for Saturday, November 23rd. This year's theme will be old-fashioned country Christmas. She had checked into the types of scoreboards and costs for Heritage Park. More discussion will take place on that issue at a later meeting. Information on a One Call Now program was shared. There needs to be more input from the general public to see if this program would be beneficial to Crescent City residents. Bills were approved for payment. Next meeting, November 11th. A paragraph on a police report. The Watsika Police Department conducted a short investigation that led to the arrest of a Watsika High School agriculture teacher. According to police reports, on October 10th, police arrested Bailey Bushong, 23, of Hoopston, on grooming and harmful material charges. The report goes on to say police were notified on October 8th of a teacher that was reportedly making inappropriate comments to the students during her teaching. At this time, police launched an investigation in which numerous students were interviewed at the Children's Advocacy Center in Watsika. Police also learned that the teacher had on a few occasions showed some of the students pornographic images. Bushong was transported to the Iroquois County Jail, where she remains. The investigation is ongoing and more charges may be pending. The Unit 9 School District posted a statement on social media the afternoon of October 11th. It reads, "Dear parents and guardians, today the district was made aware that an employee was arrested. This employee has been and will remain on leave during this investigation. We are fully cooperating with DCFS and law enforcement in their investigation. The safety and security of our students and staff remain our number one priority. All questions should be directed to those two entities, DCFS and Watsika Police. And we have been advised to make no further comment at this time," signed by Superintendent Dr. David Andriano. Next article, the Eastern Illinois Mutual Aid Fire Association and Iroquois County Board have issued a reminder to residents that there is a burn ban in place for all of the county. The association is comprised of all 21 fire departments located in Iroquois County. According to a press release issued earlier today, all fire chiefs of the county have agreed that the burn ban should be in place. The press release reads, "The fire chief has the authority to issue a burn ban pursuant with Illinois state law, directing everyone to refrain from any open burning, including landscape waste, agriculture waste, household trash, and garbage. Also included in this ban are any type of consumer fireworks. The fire departments can by law impose fines for violation of this burn ban and will, after warning and extinguishing these fires, impose a fine of $100. Fines will double for the second violation. This ban will be in effect until further notice." A birthday to celebrate, Mary Jane Day of Watsika is celebrating her 90th birthday with an open house October 19th, Saturday. The event, which will be hosted by her husband Al, will take place at the American Legion Post 23 in Watsika. Mary Jane and Al have 3 children, 8 grandchildren, and 6 great-grandchildren. Mary Jane was born in Champaign to Max and Helen Hopping Stark. She and Al were married in 1957. She taught 20 years in the Watsika school system. The Calvary Lutheran Church will be conducting a fish fry on October 25th from 4 to 6 p.m. at the church in Watsika. It will be drive-up only. The menu will include Calvary-style codfish, baked beans, potato salad, and desserts. It will be a free will offering to benefit Calvary's Lutheran Preschool. United Way of Kankakee and Iroquois Counties is hosting a No Fear fundraising training created as a free resource for all area nonprofits. This event will be held Thursday, October 31st from 8:30 to 10 at Kankakee Community College. According to information from the organization, nonprofit leaders, staff, and board members are invited to attend this free session, which will feature guest speakers Joe Giacchino, Vice President with Thompson Associates, and Nicole Smolkovich with the Community Foundation of Kankakee River Valley. Attendees will gain guidance on building an effective fundraising plan, learn from the experience of area fundraising experts, and practical tips for engaging their board in the fundraising process. This training was created to empower any local nonprofit teams who are needing support in growing their organization's fundraising process. No RSVP is needed. To learn more, or if you have any questions, contact the Executive Director of United Way. The Iroquois County Clerk's Election Department will be open November 2nd from 8:30 to noon. According to information provided, registered voters who would like to vote before Election Day may go to the County Clerk's office up through the early voting deadline, November 4th, to cast their vote. In addition, if a person is not registered to vote or if has moved and need to change their address, they may do so during this time and vote in the office at the same time. Anyone that would like to register needs to bring two forms of identification with them. One article would need to show their current living address as well as a mailing address. The county clerk's office is located on Grant Street in the Administrative Center in Watsika. The Ford Iroquois Retired Teachers Association will conduct its last meeting of the year on October 23rd. That meeting will take place at 11:30 at Market Street Grill in Paxton. After the meeting, those who want are invited to tour Silver Tree Distillery, which is just a block from the Market Street Grill. For those touring Silver Tree Distillery, there are fees for the tour and taste testing. Iroquois County Christmas Cantata will return this year under the direction of Jesse Fayland and Eric Parmenter. The cantata will take a different direction as it will mirror Olivet Nazarene University's Sounds of the Season Christmas concert. With the change, the audience can remain engaged with the usual solos and smaller groups at the beginning, then the larger choir will do a 35-minute presentation of 7 songs for the second half. This will reduce the amount of preparation time for music, which will then reduce rehearsal time. In order to make the cantata successful, singers are needed. Anyone who has an interest in singing with this group is invited to reach out to Fayland or Parmenter, or follow them on their Facebook page, Iroquois County Christmas Cantata. This year's program is Come Worship the King, with presentations set for Sunday, December 15th and Friday, December 20th at First Christian Living Hope Church in Watsika. The obituary section includes Joan Elizabeth Vaughn, 98 years of age, formerly of Williamsport, passed away October 12th in Lafayette. Friends may call on October 16th from 5 to 8 at Moss Funeral Home in Attica. Funeral Thursday, October 17th. Burial will follow. Memorial contributions may be made to the Williamsport Christian Church or the Warren County Ambulance Service. Mary Teresa Bishop, who went by the name Terry, passed away October 5th in Warsaw. Born in Monticello, Titus Funeral Home was entrusted with the care of Terry. Lloyd D. Eastburn, 88 years of age, of Watsika, passed away October 2nd in Joliet. Visitation will be Friday, October 25th, from 9 a.m. until the 10 a.m. funeral mass at St. Edmund's Catholic Church in Watsika. Burial will follow in the GAR Cemetery near Watsika. Memorials may be given to the Diaconate Office of Joliet, Iroquois Memorial Hospice, or American Cancer Society. Arrangements are by the Knapp Funeral Home in Watsika. An article from the Indiana Capital Chronicle. In the third quarter of 2024, Indiana's Republican statewide candidates outraged their Democratic opponents in the latest campaign finance reports filed with the Indiana Secretary of State's office. However, both Democrats in the governor's and attorney general's races reported more individual donations than Republican contenders between July 1st and September 30th of this year. Republican gubernatorial nominee Mike Braun survived a bitterly competitive and expensive six-way primary and continues to rake in large contributions, bringing in nearly $3.2 million. His haul outpaced the amount Democrat nominee Jennifer McCormick brought in during the same reporting period, which totaled $1.2 million. That amount comes in on top of the $1.7 million Braun already had in July. He spent nearly $3.6 million and ended with roughly $1.3 million cash on hand. The biggest subcategory of donations for Braun came from political action committees. Such groups spanned the gamut, including major healthcare players like insurer Cigna, nursing homes, groups representing family physicians, and lobbying organizations. Combined contributions totaled $1.4 million. The sitting U.S. senator has targeted high healthcare costs as a major issue for his campaign, continuing his work on the congressional level. Major utility companies also contributed outside of PACs, including Duke Energy and AES Indiana, as well as the state's hospital lobbying organization and insurers Moline Healthcare, Elevance Health, and Delta Dental. In contrast, Ms. McCormick's fundraising relied more heavily on educators, unions, and other Democrats. A former teacher and the last superintendent of public instruction, McCormick scored several donations from the state's teacher unions, including $213,000 from the Indiana State Teachers Association, another $5,000 from the American Federation of Teachers state chapters. Democratic politicians and other organizations added $65,000. McCormick started the reporting period with just over $700,000 and spent nearly $1.6 million. The above campaign finance reports don't include the latest donations from national groups like the Republican Governors Association and the Democratic Governors Association. Both put more dollars into the race following polling that put McCormick within striking distance of Braun. The race for Attorney General in the fundraising race for the office of Attorney General, incumbent Todd Rokita, started ahead and stayed well ahead of his Democratic challenger in campaign finance reports. Another article, Indiana Department of Natural Resources in the town of Sheridan celebrated the completion of phase one of the Monon Trail extension in northern Hamilton County. The asphalt multi-use trail was constructed by the town of Sheridan with help from a $2 million-some-plus Next Level Trails grant. The award was announced by Governor Eric Holcomb on April 22 as part of the third grant round of NLT. The Monon Trail is a shining example of the immense value we gain when folks work together to build trails, said Dan Bortner, DNR director. This iconic Central Indiana Trail runs more than 26 miles through multiple counties and communities, which requires collaboration to make possible. We are proud to come alongside so many Hoosiers who use the Monon Trail daily to support this trail extension with Next Level Trails funding support. The trail follows the historic railroad corridor north into the town center of Sheridan to 2nd Street. Construction of Phase 1 included a new trailhead with parking at Ohio Street. To the south, the existing Monon Trail extends more than 26 miles and travels through Westfield, Carmel, Broad Ripple, ultimately terminating at 10th Street in downtown Indianapolis. Phase 2 will begin in 2025. Social Security benefits and supplemental security income payments for more than 72.5 million Americans will increase 2.5% in 2025, the Social Security Administration announced last week. On average, Social Security retirement benefits will increase by about $50 per month starting in January. Over the last decade, the COLA increase has averaged about 2.6%. Nearly 68 million Social Security beneficiaries will see an increased cost of living adjustment in January 25. Increased payments to nearly 7.5 million people receiving SSI will begin in December of 24. Some other adjustments that take effect in January of each year are based on the increase in average wages. Based on that increase, the maximum amount of earnings subject to the Social Security tax is slated to increase. Northern Indiana Public Service Company announced that natural gas residential customers can expect an increase in their winter heating bills this season compared to last year. Based on current market projections and assuming normal winter weather, bills for natural gas residential customers are estimated to be 15% higher in contrast to cost at this same period in 2023 and 17% lower compared to 2022. Another article from the Indiana Capital Chronicle regarding the election. Aaron Landis wants to vote, but a state program meant to protect Landis and her five children from a domestic abuser has complicated her access to the polls. Landis, who described herself as a centrist Democrat with union roots, last tried to vote several years ago. "It did cause a lot of chaos the last time I tried to vote," she told the Capital Chronicle. "Clerks could not give me straight answers. I went through so many people just trying to call office after office explaining the same story. No one could help me. Landis does not know if her vote was counted. Her true address is shielded by the Address Confidentiality Program. The initiative, administered by the Office of the Indiana Attorney General, seeks to protect survivors of domestic abuse, stalking, sexual assault, human trafficking, and other offenses. A confidential post office box nearly 3 hours away has served as the family's official address for about a decade. The P.O. box is what's listed on their identification cards, which are required to vote in Indiana. The program changes how participants vote, according to the Secretary of State's office. Landis said, "Trying to use my ID for anything, it's an issue. It's meant to provide safety for myself and my family, and it's more of a burden." The 46-year-old and her voting-age children are among the million-plus eligible Hoosiers who don't participate in elections. Indiana's voter turnout sank to 50th out of 51 in a ranking of the U.S. states and the District of Columbia in the 2022 midterm elections, according to the most recent Indiana Civic Health Index. The state landed at just 46th in the contentious 2020 election. Candidates, issues, drive decisions, other Hoosiers show less interest in voting. A plurality of more than 1,000 respondents told the Indiana Community Action Poverty Institute that they did not know enough about the candidates or issues to vote in a survey conducted in November 23 to February 24. Some confessed they did not know how or where to vote in written responses to the Institute, which shared its survey results with the Indiana Capital Chronicle. Linda Hansen, who leads the Nonpartisan League of Women Voters Indiana chapter, said a traditionally poor civics education has likely contributed to a voting eligible population that feels uninformed about candidates' issues and even the mechanics of voting. There is guidance on their website to help any voter. Another voter, Riley Cho, knows who's on the ballot but doesn't like the options. The Marion County resident, who reported leaning a little bit left of a moderate Democrat, said candidate quality is key. The 20-year-old described participating in two elections thus far and volunteering with political efforts, but their vote isn't a guarantee. "I've submitted a ballot with entries left blank, as in a vote of no confidence." Cho is deeply critical of Indianapolis Mayor Joe Hogsett, his administration, and by extension, the Indiana Democratic Party. "Having to choose a party that lets sexual assault go unpunished because my rights could go away if the other side wins does not make me excited to vote." A different article, the Indiana Chief Supreme Court Justice Loretta Rush reflects on the latest annual report. She said one of the core areas that needs improvement is the state's handling of mental health crises and drug addiction, familiar themes for her as a judge. A few months ago, the state's highest court hired behavioral health specialist and licensed attorney to oversee training efforts and identify local resources available to counties. There is also a crisis with the shortage of attorneys, especially in rural areas. Filming inside a courtroom is also discussed and will probably be part of the future in certain pilot programs. This concludes reading this week's issue of the Iroquois County Times-Republic. Thank you so much for listening and enjoy the rest of your week.